Welcome to another episode of the hottest forgut fermenting podcast. That's right, beer and bovids. Today we have a fascinating guest who recently returned from Japan, assisting the sea shepherd in fighting off local whalers. This is a true hero. Today he will be talking to us about the Alpine Ibex, a crazy critter that seems to defy gravity. Please welcome conservationists, biologist, motivational speaker, and even a recovering alcoholic, Anthony Voutinas.
Hey man, thanks for having me on. Great intro, by the way. A little personal at the end, but we'll roll with it.
Yeah, good to see you, man. I'm a big fan of your work. Let's hear what you've been doing, man.
Yeah, man, I've just been doing some research on Ibex recently. Just getting to know like all the basic things about them and their life and how they operate.
Yeah, let's get right into it, man. Tell me about the Alpine Ibex. Where are they from? What's their taxonomy, man? What are they
doing? All right, well, we'll start with where they're from. They're currently, the Alpine Ibex live in the European Alps. Okay. The European Alps are really rugged terrain, really cold, high elevation, steep cliffs, rocky, not too much trees. It's like above tree levels where they usually hang out.
Sure.
And as far as taxonomy goes, they're in the order Artiodactyla. They're clove-hoot ruminant, which means they're in the family Bovidae, and their subfamily is Caprinae. This is specifically goats. So the Alpine Ibex arose around 12,000 years ago, kind of around the end of the last ice age.
Cool.
This rough, like, time in evolutionary history, the ice age puts a lot of pressure on them. It kind of shaped them to be these really rugged goats that kind of badass, and they like survive in some rough conditions, rough terrain. They have a lot of cool adaptations that help them do this as well.
Dude, that's super cool, man. So what are some physical attributes of these ghosts, you know? How do they survive such a harsh environment that you're talking about?
Yeah, so kind of their most powerful tool and the thing that is most interesting about them is their split hoof, which means they have two toes on their hoof. They have an ungulate-grade foot posture. So obviously they're an ungulate, they have hooves, and they're able to put their weight on one toe or the other. This helps when they're especially on like really steep cliffs and have to just kind of on these narrow ledges where they can't fit their whole foot on. They can move all their weight onto their inside toe, and this allows them to kind of keep their balance and move on these like seemingly impassable areas. They have a really short, stocky build. This gives them a low center of gravity, and it allows them to thrive in these tough, tough, cliffed out environments. And one really cool adaptation that they have is their big, sturdy horns. It seems like this would be almost detrimental to them, kind of like taking up a lot of space when they're on these narrow cliffs. But they actually use them for mating purposes and fighting over mates. But we'll talk about that a little later.
Yeah, let's get into it right now, man. Are they social species? Like, you know, what are their behaviors? What are they like, you know? How do they get down? How do they mate, man? Let's hear it.
Yeah, so they do get down, and it's pretty interesting what they do. Yeah. They are a very social species, especially the females. The females live in large herds, relatively large herds. I'd say like 20 to 30 individuals sometimes at the higher end, but usually around 10 to 20. During the mating season, like all the males gather around, but during the rest of the year, the males are kind of on their own. They hang out in smaller herds, or they just go way down in elevation and like are looking for just grasses and stuff. And they actually end up coming into contact with some domestic goats and sheep, which can cause issues that we'll maybe talk about later. So during mating season, all the males gather around the females, and they end up fighting for it. There's usually one alpha male per herd, and that male kind of has the right to mate with all the females, and the females just kind of follow him around and hang out with him. But some of the younger, scrappier males will be like, hey, I want to get in on some of that. I want to get my DNA into the gene pool. And they'll challenge the big male to a fight where they just kind of back up and they ram their heads into each other super hard.
Yeah.
Kind of like bighorn sheep that we're familiar with here.
Sure.
It's kind of crazy. It seems like it could be detrimental to them, but there seems to be no effects of like having these constant head injuries. Like, they seem to just live fine, and they live up to like 13 years, 14 years old, which is pretty long for goats, actually. Yeah. And this mating style where the male gets a right is called a the right to the herd is a polygynous style. It's where one male mates with multiple females and the females only mate once. This is pretty common amongst a lot of mammals, except humans for some reason, but we don't need to get into that right now.
Yeah, for sure, man.
Anyway, so yeah, let's move on.
Yeah, man. So, you know, where are they eating? You know, what kind of things are they foraging on?
So they eat pretty much anything they can get. They're in these high alpine environments, pretty rough, not a lot of vegetation growing. They eat scrubs. They eat mosses. They eat little grasses growing in the between the talus rocks. And then they'll eat various flowers and roots. So like I said, they're like a foregut fermenter. They're herbivorous. So they have like a four-chambered stomach. Nice. It's a really complicated process. And they spit up their cud of the food that doesn't quite get digested, and they re-chew it. That's a pretty common trait of goats in the bovid family.
Yeah, that's kind of nasty, man. I know.
Yeah, but it does sound kind of gross, but there's some other ones that eat their own poop, and luckily, I don't believe they do that.
Well, I'm happy for them on that, man. But tell me about their history, dude. Like, I know before we started talking here, on air, you're like, you know, they've kind of had a rough past, but let's talk about that. Like, what are they doing now? Like, how are we doing, huh?
Yeah, now they're doing pretty good, but yeah, their history was rough. So, around since the 1500s, they've pretty much been coveted after by humans. They have this mythical status almost passed down from generations, probably just because of how like beautiful they look and their amazing abilities they have of climbing. It's just been a strong belief of people in that area that parts of their body, especially their horns and even their feces, believe it or not, has medical properties that can help heal people and even act as an aphrodisiac or give them like special, it can give people like physical attributes of the goat. Some people like mountaineers believe if they like grind up the horn and ingest it, that it gives them a little extra boost and a little extra power when they're climbing. So they've been coveted after for a while. They've been hunted steadily and have kind of steadily declined from like their early 1500s all the way to like the 1900s. And the early 1900s, recorded in 1906, was their lowest of the low. There was only about 100 individuals left in the Gran Paradiso National Park of the Italian Alps. So that actually is like their biggest issue, is they had this really tight population bottleneck, which limited their genetic diversity. This kind of like leads to genetic drift and allele fixations. And I'm not a geneticist. We're not going to get into that right now, but it's not good for their overall health. It makes them more susceptible to diseases. It makes them more susceptible to inbreeding, and that's just not good all the way around. So there's been a lot of work and a lot of effort put into these last 100 individuals. They were selected for and like tried to trace their lineages and make sure to limit inbreeding, and it actually worked. And they were able to bring their population back from 100 to a couple thousand. And once that kind of population stabilized in Gran Paradiso, they had a kind of bigger picture of bringing the alpine ibex back to all over the Alps. And they did, and they selected the proper individuals and mated them and retranslocated them into these new areas of the Alps where they used to be but weren't found anymore. And they actually have had probably the most successful reintroduction of any other critter in Europe. There was 100 of them, and now there's about 55,000 individuals thriving in the Alps. And because of the genetic diversity issue we mentioned earlier, they have been having issues with some diseases like brucellosis. The big worry about brucellosis is transmitting it to the domestic goats and sheep when those males come down in the spring.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, it sounds like these goats are pretty resilient, huh?
Yeah, man, they're pretty tough. It's pretty inspiring to see, like, what they were able to come back from and the management practices we helped. Yes, we caused them to have their extreme decline, but we've also kind of gotten our act together and brought them back from the brink. And it's really inspiring to see that, to see hopefully we can maybe do that with some other species around the world that aren't doing so hot right now.
Yeah, man. Well, it's good to hear these goats are as resilient as Troy Andersen, but not as soft as Matt McKay, you know?
Yeah, can you believe that, man? I can't believe he said he's leaving MSU right before the playoffs.
I know, so right? Sad. It's not like we were going to upset the number one in the nation. But anyways, what an amazing comeback story, man. I mean, absolutely. Both for the Cats and the Goats.
And the Goats. Go Cats, baby. Yeah. And go Goats. Go Ibex. Ibex are super cool, man. They're beautiful creatures.
Hopefully they can continue to dominate in their home and, you know, the home of the Alps.
I believe they can. Yeah. I believe they will if we keep implementing these strong hunting regulations and conservation efforts to kind of keep the population in check and keep them, you know, from reaching their carrying capacity and maybe detrimenting themselves in the future.
Yeah, hopefully it's for generations to come too, right?
Absolutely, man. Well, I really appreciate you having me on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for coming to the show, Anthony. It was a pleasure. Wish you luck on your rehab, and I'll see you on the podcast next week, right?
Amazing. Thank you.
Yeah, bye, man. Alec. Have a good one.